This is John Wilkerson, host of the Wired Homeschool. It's no secret that you're listening to the Secret Fire Podcast on the Great Commission Transmission Network.
Gandalf, my old friend, this will be a night to remember.
Broadcasting from the foot of Weathertop, Amansul in the Lone Lands, Middle-earth, this is the Secret Fire Podcast, sent to burn at the heart of the world, episode number 16. I'm Michael.
And I'm Brendan.
I'm Micah.
On this episode, Flight to the Ford. That's it. Just Flight to the Ford. Let's giddy up and go! We invite you to come along, join the fellowship, become a servant of the Secret Fire each week here on the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
I always pull my headphones out because I forget I need to.
You definitely can't tell you wrote that intro like 3 seconds before.
Hey, that was clever.
Let's giddy up and go.
We have a long way to go and a short time to get there. Do you think we can do chapter 12 in one episode?
I feel like we can.
Okay, well, you are driving the ship. Okay. So where did we leave off last episode?
Well, we left off.
When we last left our hobbits.
That's right. That's
and Strider and Guide.
You know, actually, I said I was ready and I wasn't because guess what I did not do?
You didn't open up your spreadsheet.
I didn't open up the book. No, the spreadsheet's
the
open.
Okay,
spreadsheet's
good.
Open.
Okay. And so now we have to fill a little bit of time here, Brendan, in order to up and go. Everybody in the audience, if you're watching live on twitch.tv/secretfirepodcast, we welcome you. If you're watching the recording of this after the fact, we welcome you as well. We're glad that you're part of the fellowship as we go on this journey through Middle Earth. And I got to tell you, there are so many descriptive terms in this chapter about the lay of the land and the path that they are taking. I keep going back to that comment, Brendan, that one of your good friends said to you, Brendan, I don't know how you can be doing a show on The Lord of the Rings because Tolkien would use, six pages?
6 pages to describe a tree branch.
You know, it's the little things like that in this one, such as the part where we get to where they are just, especially when they meet up with an unnamed elf. We'll wait till we get to that point, and they just collapse in the heather. I could see, I'm there with them. That is what Tolkien is so adept at, is putting you on the saddle with Frodo, putting you in the fuzzy feet of Sam. You are really, truly there. And so I want listeners to pay particular attention to that as we are going along in this chapter. Chapter 12, Flight to the Ford.
Yeah, and speaking of lay of the land, let's get the sounds of the land going.
Oh, yes, you're right. I won't do it abruptly. We'll ease into it. Here we go.
Nice and slow.
If you have to describe it while you're doing it, then it loses its luster.
I like to narrate everything that I do. You should see me when I'm by myself in the house. When you want to open the door, first you proceed to put your hand on the door handle, and then you turn like so.
Oh, Lord.
Is that too loud? No, I think that's fine.
That's
all right.
Good.
Brendan, where did we leave off last episode?
That's good suspenseful music.
Oh.
We last left off when Frodo just got stabbed by the
knife in the dark.
By the knife in the dark. I was trying to think. Now, was that a Morgul blade? Do we find that out later?
I think technically speaking, yes.
Yes? Okay. All right. Cool. He's just been stabbed. At that moment, Frodo threw himself forward on the ground and heard himself crying aloud, "Oh, Elbereth, Githaniel."
Was that right? Yes, you did.
Thank you. At the same time, he struck at the feet of his enemy. A shrill cry rang out in the night, and he felt the pain like a dart of poison ice pierce his left shoulder.
Mm.
Even as he swooned, he caught... Whoa, what? Even as he swooned, he caught, as though a swirling mist, a glimpse of Strider leaping out of the darkness with a flaming brand of wood in either hand. With a last effort, Frodo, dropping his sword, slipped the ring from his finger and closed his right hand tied upon it.
That brings us to chapter 12.
That does bring us there.
Flight to the Ford.
When Frodo came to himself, he was still clutching the ring desperately. He was lying by the fire, which was now piled high and burning brightly. His three companions were bending over him. "What has happened? Where is the Pale King?" he asked wildly. They were too overjoyed to hear him speak to answer for a while, nor did they understand his question. At length he gathered from Sam that they'd seen nothing but the vague, shadowy shapes coming towards them.
Thank you, Mr. Rob Inglis.
That was really cool with the underscoring of Lotro.
Yes.
And Rob's voice on top of that. That was really cool.
You know, I like, we are going to remember the Frodo calling out. What did he call out as he's...
Oh, Elbereth, Githoniel.
You know, that brings us back to chapter three. Three is company, where we talked about that love that the elves have for Elbereth. Very important. That who set the swordsman of the sky, right?
Mm-hmm.
Set the constellations for these. So instead of going back in time, us, and rehashing that, we want to encourage any new listeners to go back to episode number four of the Secret Fire podcast and listen. That is when we do meet Gildor Ragnar, I mean, Inglorion.
And Victor Gardner, or Victor Garber. Gardner, Victor Garber. He was a great Jesus.
What has happened? Where is the Pale King? He asked wildly.
Just to get this first scene going, Strider and the other hobbits did not see any Pale Kings. They only saw the Black Riders. So there's that set up there. Frodo disappeared and it was heard as if only from a great distance or from under the ground.
I love that.
Very interesting.
Yes.
Kind of similar to in previous chapters, that description of being underwater.
Yes.
When you're under the influence of these Black Riders, there's that distance, and I like that. Strider disappears. What's he doing? And this causes a little bubble of distrust with Sam. But Strider comes back to reassure them. Strider was trying to track the rider's movements, but he could not do it. And then Strider says he understands things more clearly. And here's what I've highlighted.
Oh, right.
Okay. When he heard what Frodo had to tell, he became full of concern and shook his head and sighed. And then he ordered Pippin and Merry to heat as much water as they could with their small kettles to bathe the wound with it. Keep that fire going well and keep Frodo warm, he said. And then he got up and walked away and called Sam to him. I think I understand things better now, he said with a low voice. There seem to have only been five of the enemy. Why they were not all here, I don't know. But I don't think they expected to be resisted. They have drawn off for the time being, but not far, I fear. They will come again another night if we cannot escape. They are only waiting because they think that their purpose is almost accomplished and that the ring cannot fly much further. I fear, Sam, that they believe your master has a deadly wound that will subdue him to their will. And we shall see.
Mm.
And then Sam's response, Sam choked with tears. But don't despair, said Strider. You must trust me now. Your Frodo is made of sterner stuff than I had guessed. Though Gandalf hinted at it, that it might prove so. He is not slain. And I think he will resist the evil power of the wound longer than his enemies expect. I will do all I can to help and heal him. Guard him well while I'm away. He hurried off and disappeared again into the darkness.
Listen, so Sam was beginning to have doubts again about Strider.
Mm-hmm.
But while they were talking, you know, Strider returned, just as you said, appearing suddenly out of the shadows. And I love that Strider is so cognizant of Sam's undying devotion to Frodo at the cost of all other things, right? That's what Gildor told him. Don't you leave him, Samwise Gamgee. And I don't plan to. I don't mean to. Only death will separate us, and I'm going to prevent that as long as possible. But right now, his master is knocking on death's door, and I just, it's moving to me when it says Sam choked with tears, and Strider assures him again, don't despair. You must trust me now, and that goes back to our discussion on trust and hope in the last chapter. Sam, we're going. If we make it through this, stick with me. Stick with me. Trust me. If we make it through this, think of those tables in the House of Elrond. There will be comfort and there will be healing. Right?
Yes. Yes. So Strider goes off. We're on to the next scene. Strider goes off, but he returns as dawn was growing in the sky. You know, we've talked briefly about Dawn in our other show, Finding Christ in Cinema, because she's got a new movie coming out, Dawn of the War of the Planet of
the
Apes.
Yes, yes, yes. Dawn made it.
Yeah, Dawn made it,
yeah,
apparently.
Yeah.
That was an excellent film.
Yes. I didn't see it, but I'm glad that she survived.
But we get this continuation of the imagery with Strider being being like a manifestation of hope. When he leaves, it's awful dark. It's without hope. It's in the, well, of course, it's in the night. All these things seem to be poetically crafted together, as they should be.
Hey.
And then he returns at dawn, where hope brightens. And some might say, "Well, that's not realistic." Well, it's not supposed to be. It's supposed to transcend reality. This is a story meant to pack a punch, and so it's going to be poetic. Then, once the sun starts hitting places, they can see evidences of this fight that happened between Frodo and what he calls the Pale Kings. There's a piece of the black cloak. There's a piece of the black cloak.
A clue!
And then it will...
Now we're playing Blue's Clues. Dun, dun, dun,
no.
Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, man.
Oh.
That is not the right time to do that.
Not at all.
And then they see the dagger itself. The dagger that pierced Frodo's shoulder. And right as what's-his-face, Aragorn Strider, picks it up...
What's-his-face? He's the king!
It was a blip of memory. I'm sorry. He picks up the dagger, and the blade melts away. The book says melts, but it, like, dissolves into
smoke.
A fog.
They got that fog. Yes, they got that right in the film.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking.
They're just in the wrong area.
So you're telling me that they cut out Tom Bombadil... But they got a knife right.
At least they got the dagger right.
At least they got the dagger right.
Hey, we can pull that off. Tom Bombadil, we can't.
Oh,
hey, that's
well,
what,
well, that's probably how it went down.
Yes.
But hey, Tom shows up later in the chapter.
Maybe.
Or does
maybe.
He? Does
yes,
he?
Yes, yes.
Does he? But Michael, good news. There is a bomb.
In Gil-galad.
No, but it's not with Gil-galad.
Oh.
It was with Strider, because that's why he left.
Yes.
He left the first time to see if he could go track the Black Riders. He left the second time to go seek out a very mysterious plant that has apparently a lot of history behind it.
Oh, yes.
As with everything in Middle-earth, Rob Inglis pronounces it as Athelas.
Okay.
When I was reading it, for some reason, I heard Athelas.
Mm-hmm.
So, Athelas, whatever this plant is, it lessens Frodo's pain and it calms the others.
Oh!
Picking up on page 198.
Okay.
In the Kindle edition. Strider, he threw the leaves into boiling water and bathed Frodo's shoulder. The fragrance of the steam was refreshing, and those that were unhurt felt their minds calmed and cleared.
Can I stop you for a second?
Go ahead, yeah.
Okay, because when he's saying, you know, pulling these leaves out of his pouch... and he says, it's fortunate that I could find it, for it is a healing plant.
Oh, yes.
That the men of the West brought to Middle Earth. The men of the West, the Numenoreans, his kin. Mm-hmm. Okay, I can't wait until we could get into talking about the Numenoreans. But this reminded me of something, huh?
Oh, I was going to say, it's interesting that he couldn't see it because it was so dark. He had to go by its smell,
yes,
its fragrance to find it.
Well, he's an excellent tracker.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. But this reminds me, these leaves for healing obviously take my brain goes, bing, Revelation chapter 22, yo.
Oh, tell us about it.
Okay.
Tell us what we have to look forward to.
Revelation chapter 22, verses 1 and 2 out of the NASB, the New American Standard Bible. Then he showed me a river of water, of the water of life, clear as crystal, coming from the throne of God and of the Lamb. In the middle of its street On either side of the river was the Tree of Life, bearing 12 kinds of fruit, yielding its fruit every month, and the leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations, which is a throwback, a hearkening that should get Bible students to say, where have I read that before? Oh, you read that in Ezekiel chapter 47.
Obviously.
Verse 12, by the river on its bank, on one side and on the other, will grow all kinds of trees for food. Their leaves will not wither and their fruit will not fail. They will bear every month because their water flows from the sanctuary, and their fruit will be for food and their leaves for healing. Now, those who are familiar with the story, have read The Lord of the Rings, know that I'm punctuating this because it's a huge foreword coming up later on, much, much later on. But here is Strider with these leaves of healing. Okay, so I had to pop that in there.
Okay.
I would have been remiss because this is a huge forward.
Should I know what the forward is pointing
no,
to?
No, because it's not
in
the film.
I don't even know what it's pointing to. So.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, good. I'll tell you, Micah, I'll remind you because you do know after the show.
I don't know.
All right.
Okay. So, picking back up, the fragrance of the steam was refreshing, and those that were unhurt felt their minds calmed and cleared. The herb also had some power over the wound, for Frodo felt the pain, and also the sense of frozen cold lessen in his side. But life did not return to his arm, and he could not raise or use his hand, and he bitterly regretted his foolishness. Elegiac lament.
Yes.
And reproached himself.
I had this highlighted for that very
reason.
Okay,
there you go. And reproached himself for weakness of will. For he now perceived that in putting on the ring, he obeyed not his own desire, but the commanding wish of his enemies.
And we all know exactly what it is to reproach ourselves for weakness of will. How often have we said in our lives, how could I be so stupid to have done that? Mm-hmm. That's what he's thinking.
Just to go along with that.
A ninny hammer.
A what?
Ninny hammer.
I have no idea what that
You'll
means.
Get to that, too.
Okay, yes. All right. I had something important to say.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, boy.
I'm sorry.
The reproach of ourselves. Okay, yeah. Well, it just reminded me briefly of what Paul says in Romans 7. You know, we know the thing to do, but we don't do it. And then we know what not to do, and we do that anyway, and it's this sin conflicting within us. And
Such is the way of man.
Yeah. Back in the text, he wondered if he would remain maimed. Let me make sure I said that right. He wondered if he would remain maimed for life and how they would now manage to continue their journey. He felt too weak to stand. Very interesting. Mm. Very interesting. And, of course, Strider changes the route where they were going to go up and around. Now, because of Frodo's wound, and Strider even talks about this later on, it's because of Frodo's wound. I said Strider, I meant Frodo. Frodo's wound that Strider is pressing forward with the momentum that he is, because he knows how bad the wound is.
Yes.
And he's got to press on to save Frodo's life. In the next scene, we start moving away from Weathertop.
Oh, already? So soon?
Yeah.
Our journey in Weathertop is over, the one that's began in the Midgewater marshes, really, because as they could see it in the distance and see fireworks and flames and lightning going off on the hill. Let's take a moment. Let's pause for just a moment and listen to a great song by Brobdingnagian Bards.
Yeah.
And listen to the tale of Weathertop.
Escape along the great road, Strider, my friends, and I, Frodo. The Black Riders follow, just five of their lot. If only we'll meet Gandalf on Weathertop. Midgewater marshes and treacherous bogs, and knicker-breakers squeaking through the cold, gloomy fog. Off in the distance, our eyes are caught by leaps of lightning on Weathertop. Many days on the road have left us thin. To joke, we look like wraiths, seems all far too grim. We turn towards Amonsul, now long crumbled with rot, where the watchtower was burned on No Weather Top. Climb the hill with hope of finding Gandalf, but tracks in the dust tell us he was off. Down the great road our hearts are distraught. Five black riders race towards Old Weathertop. Strider, there's nowhere safe between here and there. So sit your backs to the fire, on guard for the plot. For our battle begins tonight on No Weather Top. Figures, wraiths and moonlight. Terror ensnares us. Sam speeds to my side. I hear the ring calling me to hide. I reach in my pocket and grip it tight. My mind goes blind to warnings of a too high. Slip the ring on, unleashing my hell, as the Hail King's knife stabs me and I'm quelled. Joy, I live and still clutch the ring. My body is weak, but our journey unstopped as we make our escape from Over the Top.
Yes, the Brobdingnagian Bards with Weathertop, and that was taken off their album Memories of Middle-earth. And friends, let me click over here if you are watching live on the Brobdingnagian Bards website. It's the bards.net. Check it out. You know, they split up quite a while ago, but they get together often or every once in a while. And their next upcoming show, and listen up, patron saint Ron of the South Farthing, because he will be here September 1st through the 4th, 2017, at Dragon Con in Atlanta, Georgia.
Dragon Con.
Yes, and they will. Oh boy, we need to have Ron call in and give us some updates and some. I think he goes every year, and his kids and wife got him a ticket this year for Father's Day. That was his Father's Day present.
Yes, yes.
We saw that on Facebook, huh, Brandon? Anyway, they're doing shows daily. So again, Brobdignagian Bards, thank you so much. And of course, they are our intro and outro song as well, our theme music for the Secret Fire podcast.
As we left off, Michael.
Yeah.
We get to talk about a certain beast that we have grown to love.
Oh.
That we have grown to love here on the Secret Fire show, on the Secret Fire podcast. Continuing on to scene three. As soon as daylight was full, they had some hurried food and packed, and it was impossible for Frodo to walk, so they divided the greater part of their baggage among the four of them and put Frodo on the pony.
Yeah, the pony.
The pony.
Yes.
And I'm surprised the word pony is not capitalized in the text, because we know who this is.
Which is actually, you know what, that's a literary discussion for another time, but when Tolkien does that, see, that we don't do that in American English. He was doing writing this,
yes,
you know.
Yes.
So anyway, capitalizing. It's not a pronoun. It's not a
common nouns.
Common nouns.
Well, it's like the difference between capitalizing. Like in my paper, like in one of my school papers, I did this, and I had a parenthetical citation as to why. But when you're talking about like a certain theater,
yes,
like a particular performance space, lowercase t. But whenever I would switch between talking about a specific performance space and the general subject of theater, I capitalized it. And I was like, maybe I should put a little parenthetical citation as to why I capitalized it. But yeah. I think most of the people reading the essay would know.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But that's not common in American English.
No, it's not. It's not. In the last few days, the poor beast had improved wonderfully. It already seemed fatter and stronger and had begun to show an affection for its new masters, especially for Sam.
Yeah.
What kind of insight is that?
What I know
of,
it.
What kind
I
of forward
it.
Is that?
Well, let that sink in.
Whew, Bill Ferney's treatment must have been very hard for this journey in the wild to seem so much better than its former life.
Yeah, and you need to go back and listen to our discussion on this a few episodes ago.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, because Bill Ferney represented death.
Yeah. And then they're making way. They're making their way slowly but surely away from Weathertop. About a week passes, and they start to lose sight of what's happening in front. Because the weather's gloomy. It's just not a good sight. At the end of the fifth day, the ground began once more to rise slowly out of the wide, shallow valley into which they had descended. Strider now turned their course again northeastwards, and on the sixth day, they began to reach the top of a long climbing slope and saw far ahead a huddle of wooded hills. Away below them, they could see the road sweeping around the feet of the hills, and to their right, a gray river gleamed pale and thin in sunshine, and pale in the thin sunshine. In the distance, they glimpsed yet another river in a stony valley half veiled in the mist. Oh, there's that mist. There's that mist. I'm afraid we must go back to the road here for a while, said Strider. We have now come to the River Horwell, that the elves call... Help me out, Michael. That the elves call...
Mithaethil?
Hey, yeah.
Well, take that. Ding, 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 ding.
There you go.
Point for Micah.
It flows out of the Ettenmoors, the Troll Fells north of Rivendell. The Troll-Fells north of Rivendell. And joins the Loudwater away in the south. And some call it the Grey Flood after that. It is a great water before it finds the sea. And there's no way over it below its sources at the Edenmores, except by the last bridge.
Capitalized. Last, yes, bridge.
On the road, on which the road crosses. What is that other river we can see far away there? Asked Mary. That is Loudwater, the Bruinen of Rivendell.
Well done. Well said. Well said.
Thank you. Answered Strider. The road runs along the edge of the hills for many miles from the bridge to the ford of Bruinen. But I have not yet thought of how we shall cross that water. One river at a time. We shall be fortunate indeed if we do not find the last bridge held against us. I like how Strider is focused on the most pressing danger at that moment. He's like, okay, whoa. One river at a time. Yeah. I know we're on a big journey here, but let's keep the light to our feet and not much further out. Moving on down. Oh, what's this barrel that we find in the dirt? This token?
Don't know.
Well, here, let's read about it. What do you say? A little further down on page 200 in the Kindle, Strider made them take cover in a thicket at its side in a road, and while he went forward to explore. And before long, he came hurrying back. I can see no sign of the enemy, he said, and I wonder very much what that means. But I have found something very strange. He held out his hand, and showed a single pale green jewel. I found it in the mud in the middle of the bridge, he said. It is a barrel. An elf stone. Whether it was set there or let fall by chance, I cannot say, but it brings hope to me. I will take it as a sign that we may pass the bridge, but beyond that, I dare not keep to the road without some clearer token.
What a wonderful forward.
Yes. Yes, moving on down. Let's see, get the old outline going here. Is this troll country?
No. Well, no.
No, it's not. It's not. The flatlands, they're starting to slant upward, and Frodo sees this new land, and he recalls Bilbo's stories. And he recalls the towers to the north, and he wonders if he'll actually see the spot where Bilbo and Gandalf, haven't done that in a few episodes.
Nope.
where Gandalf and Bilbo had the fight, or the skirmish. Skirmish.
See, in fact, yeah. If you recall in The Hobbit, Gandalf was surprised that there were trolls down this far.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have been down here, especially in the movie. They even amplified that like 20 times. Right, that was just kind of
they shouldn't
of
even be here.
Yeah.
And he asks Strider. Of course, Strider says no. No, said Strider, trolls do not build. No one lives in this land. Men once dwelt here ages ago, but none remain now. They became an evil people, as legends tell, for they fell under the shadow of Angmar.
No. You have to say, for they fell under the shadow of Angmar.
Good effect. Oh, nice.
Thanks. Well, you have to make it ominous, foreboding. No, I love that. Men once dwelt here ages ago, but none remain now. They became an evil people, as legends tell.
Yes, but all were destroyed in the war that brought the North Kingdom to its end. But that is now so long ago that the hills have forgotten them, though a shadow still lies on the land. Very interesting. Where did you learn such tales? If all the land is empty and forgetful, asked Peregrine. The birds and the beasts do not tell tales of that sort.
I like that. He doesn't say that birds and beasts don't tell tales. They don't tell tales of that sort.
Mm-hmm. they do tell tales, but not like that.
Well, yep. Whoa.
Let's watch the mic stand there.
But.
Must be one of those handsome
things. Hey, the heirs of Elendil do not forget all things past, said Strider. I highlighted that one. And many more things than I can tell are remembered in Rivendell.
Now, have you often been to Rivendell, asked Frodo?
I have, said Strider. I dwelt there once, and I still return when I may. There my heart is, but it is not my fate to sit in peace, even in the fair house of Elrond. Boy, does that not recall
that packs a punch.
His kingly, I don't know how
status.
To...
Status?
Yes, in the prophet, priest, and king triumvirate. Jesus had no place to lay his head. The foxes of the ground and have holes. And, right? Mm-hmm. The Son of Man has no place to lay his head. Yeah, I did dwell. I have dwelt in Rivendell.
There his heart is.
Yes, but it is not my fate to sit in peace.
Now, here's a question I have for you guys.
All right.
Hit me.
Okay. So, the whole Lord of the Rings book is in the Middle Earth world. It's supposed to be written by Sam, right?
Well, no, you got Bilbo.
It's a combination.
Frodo.
Well, there's the Red Book of Westmarch.
Yes.
And then so what part is Frodo write?
Well,
he writes the majority of their journey, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And then he spoilers, we can't talk about that, and Sam finishes it.
Yes.
Okay.
But
okay.
But also part of those books are Bilbo's, not only his tale there and back again, but also his time in Rivendell was spent translating Elven texts into the common language.
Okay.
I mean, he really spent a good portion of his life doing that. And so, yeah, I think it's safe to say that we owe Bilbo, Frodo, and Sam mm-hmm. for the tales.
And I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure when Frodo gets back from the journey, Bilbo helps him.
Yes, yes.
With the majority of what he writes.
Yep. Well, Bilbo's the prosy one.
Mm-hmm. Well, my next question then is, who is writing this part in particular? Is it Frodo?
Well, he's not actively like on their journey.
Right.
Yeah, he's not writing it as they go. Yeah,
he's on memoir.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Okay, I ask because I just find it interesting that whoever it is switches from calling Pippin his real name, Peregrin.
Yes.
And my question is why?
Yes. That's a good mm-hmm. insight or a good observation.
Okay.
Yep.
But why? I'm asking you why.
I don't know.
Realistically, it could just be that Tolkien thinks by now the readers could be familiar enough with Pippin to know him as Pippin.
Well,
do you think that it describes...
There's a reason behind it.
Do you think that it describes what he's doing in the story at that time or alludes to...
That's... I honestly didn't have an opinion. I just left it at, okay, I'm the inquisitive researcher and you guys are the Google database. So I'm going to type in and hit search bar. So,
don't you think it could be akin to Jacob in the Old Testament? Sometimes he's referred to as Jacob, sometimes he's referred to as Israel, depending on how he's behaving at the point. When he's acting in the flesh, he's Jacob. When he is acting as a covenant, somebody that's in covenant relationship with Yahweh, he is Israel.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm just throwing things up.
That's a good logical thing. That's good.
I mean, you broadsided me with that question, so hey, I'm just speaking off the top of my head.
Well, you did well, sir.
No, thank you.
Now we're 10 days from Weathertop.
Because I answered well?
Yeah.
That just transported us in time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now we're 10 days from Weathertop.
What page are we on?
We are on, give me just one sec.
Oh.
201, 202-ish.
Okay.
I'm going to skip ahead just a little bit further. Strider goes off, and he scouts to the north, and then he comes back, and he says, okay, Frodo, you were asking if this was Troll Country? No, no, no. The place where I just went, that is Troll Country, so we're not going there, definitely. It's the only way to find... the only way to Rivendell is at the Ford of Bruinen.
Yeah.
And so the path has to be set here. Picking up around 202, they decided to attempt the climb, but it proved very difficult. And before long, Frodo was obliged to dismount and struggle along on foot. Even so, they often despaired of getting their pony up, or indeed finding a path for themselves, burdened as they were. The light was nearly gone, and they were all exhausted when at last they reached the top. They had climbed onto a narrow saddle between two higher points, and the land fell steeply away again, only a short distance ahead. Frodo threw himself down and lay on the ground, shivering. His left arm was lifeless, and his side and shoulder felt as if icy claws were laid upon them. The trees and the rocks about him seemed shadowy and dim.
Is that the first reference that we have to that mist that falls in front of his eyes in this chapter? It may be. He's in bad shape.
Yeah.
And Mary knows it.
Yeah, yep. Mary comes right up and says, "We cannot go any further," said Mary to Strider. "I'm afraid that this has been too much for Frodo, and I'm dreadfully anxious about him. What are we to do? Do they think we'll be able to cure him in Rivendell? Or do you think they'll be able to cure him in Rivendell if we ever get there?" "We shall see," answered Strider. "There's nothing more that I can do in the wilderness, and it is chiefly because of his wound that I am so anxious to press on. But I agree that we can go no further tonight."
Oh, and then Sam.
"Yeah. What's the matter with my master?" asked Sam in a low voice, looking appealingly at Strider. "His wound was small and is already closed. There's nothing there but a cold white mark on his shoulder." "Frodo has been touched by the weapons of the enemy," said Strider. "And there is some poison or evil at work that is beyond my skill to drive out."
Oh, here we go.
"But do not give up hope, Sam."
Continues to remind them, "Trust me, do not give up hope. Let's persevere. Let's press on toward the goal."
Just a little bit further down. Actually, just right after that. "Night was cold upon the high ridge, and they lit a small fire down under the gnarled roots of an old pine that hung over a shallow pit. It looked as if stone had once been quarried there. They sat huddled together. The wind blew chill through the pass, and they heard the treetops lower down moaning and sighing.
You'll get it.
Sorry. Frodo lay half in a dream, imagining that endless dark wings were sweeping by above him, and that on the wings rode pursuers that sought him in all hollows of the hills. First of all, just a couple things there.
Okay.
Just the description of endless dark wings makes me think of that song you showed me.
Night with Ebon Pinion.
Yes, and I listened to that song.
Brooding o'er the veil.
Yeah, I listened to that song, the Jordanaires version.
Oh,
with Ray Walker.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's one of the most moving hymns to me.
Yeah.
Night with with Ebon Pinion, black wings. That night hung over Christ in the garden, like black wings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. That does.
And then
guess who else thought that?
Tolkien?
No.
Oh.
Yeah, in this room, if you had to guess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. I was going
to
say
it's oppressive, and it is also another allusion to drowning, to being suffocated,
yeah.
Stifled, smothered.
Mm-hmm. And then there was a...
And it's also another prophetic dream. Oh, true. Sorry.
Oh, get out of here.
Sorry.
Get out of here with that prophecy stuff.
Yeah.
Did you dismount?
Yes. Okay. That was the pony.
Okay. But then, something else, there's a saying that my father's father had, and he, whenever
and
he was...
my father's father's father, yes, hey. And our father's 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 father's, and our, oh, sorry.
He would always say...
It's enough, Reg.
He would always say, whenever someone was feeling, like, anxious about something, he would always say, "Don't let your wearies get to you." And Frodo, right now, the wearies are getting to him.
Well, he's in bad shape.
He is, yes. Okay. We keep going. And then finally, we get to this troll hole. Huh?
I like it.
Okay, thanks. They followed around 204. They followed the track for some while. They find this track. Oh, there was something else I meant to highlight. The pony had a gift at finding tracks. I did think that was interesting. So they followed the track for some while.
He's able to use his gifts now because he's free. He's operating under grace.
There you go.
He is free to perform. I can find tracks, baby.
They followed the track for some while, for it offered much of the easiest way down, but they went cautiously, and their anxiety increased as they came into the dark woods, and the path grew plainer and broader. And suddenly, out of a belt of fir trees, it ran steeply down a slope and turned sharply to the left round the corner of a rocky shoulder of the hill. When they came to the corner, they looked round and saw that the path ran on over a level strip under the face of a low cliff with overhung trees. And in the stony wall, there was a door hanging crookedly ajar upon one great hinge.
I love this because, you know, they're going to go in, and there are two instances of this in this chapter where Strider needs to go and check out something or do something, and he takes Mary with him. Did you notice that?
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, so that made me think, oh, we need to be paying attention to that as well. How often does that happen where Mary is chosen to go along to scout out or to investigate or what have you? Because outside the door, they all halted. There was a cave or rock chamber behind, but in the gloom inside, nothing could be seen. Strider, Sam, and Mary, pushing with all their strength, managed to open the door a little wider, and then Strider and Mary went in. They did not go far, for on the floor lay many old bones.
Yes.
And nothing else was to be seen near the entrance except some great empty jars and broken pots.
Surely, this is a troll hole, if ever there was one.
You said no trolls are in this country.
I know it.
Pippin is on the... He's alert. Looking for trolls. Mm-hmm.
And in fact, he finds some.
He does.
How interesting. There are trolls. Skipping down just a little bit, Pippin panted, down in a clearing in the woods not far below. We got a sight of them through the tree trunks. They are very large. We will come and look at them, said Strider, picking up a stick. Frodo said nothing, but Sam looked scared. The sun was now high, and it shone down through the half-stripped branches of the trees and lit the clearing with bright patches of light. They halted suddenly on the edge and peered through the tree trunks, holding their breath. There stood the trolls, three large trolls. One was stooping, and the other two stood staring at him. Strider walked forward unconcernedly. Get up, old stone, he said, and he broke his stick upon the stooping troll. Nothing happened. There was a gasp of astonishment from the hobbits. Then even Frodo laughed. Well, he said, we are forgetting our family history. These must be the very three that were caught by Gandalf, quarreling over the right way to cook 13 dwarves and one hobbit. I had no idea we were anywhere near the place, said Pippin. He knew the story well. Bilbo and Frodo had told it often. But as a matter of fact, he had never more than believed it.
More than half believed it.
Thank you. Even now, he looked at the stone trolls with suspicion, wondering if some magic might not suddenly bring them to life again. Now, as a reader, I'm thinking, okay, I may not even be that familiar with The Hobbit, but I do know that trolls can't do anything in sunlight. And there's already been too much description of sunlight.
But you know what? Pippin did not remember that.
Pippin didn't.
Because he barely even half believed any of these stories anyway. So he's not going to pay attention to a detail such as that.
True, true.
You know, you are forgetting not only your family history, but all you ever knew about trolls, said Strider. It is broad daylight with a bright sun, and yet you come back trying to scare me with a tale of live trolls waiting for us in this glade? In any case, you might have noticed that one of them has an old bird's nest behind his ear. That would be a most unusual ornament for a live troll. And all the tension.
Yeah. It's like, well, comedic moment. There we
yes.
go. There we go. So, and it kind of makes me think, like, back at that cave they found with the great door on the hinge or whatever. When Pippin comes running back, there are trolls. I can just imagine Strider rolling his eyes.
Yeah.
Because he knows, like,
sure, there's trolls. Yeah.
Sure, let's go.
Funny little fellow.
let's get on our way.
So they all laugh.
They all laugh. They have a nice little moment.
Frodo felt his spirits reviving. Why? The reminder of Bilbo's first successful adventure was heartening.
Won't somebody give us a bit of song while the sun is high, said Mary, while they all had finished. Yes, okay. We haven't had a song or tale for days. Not since Weathertop, said Frodo. The others looked at him. Don't worry about me, he added. I feel much better, but I don't think I could sing. Perhaps Sam could dig something out of his memory. Come on, Sam, said Mary. There's more stored in your head than you let on about. Oh, I don't know about that, said Sam. But how would this suit? It ain't what I call proper poetry, if you understand me. Just a bit of nonsense. But these old images here brought it to my mind. And standing up, with his hands behind his back, as if he was at school, he began to sing an old tune.
Troll sat alone on a seat of stone and munched and mumbled a barrel bone. For many a year he had not it near, for meat was hard to come by, done by, come by. In a cave in the hills he dwelled alone, and meat was hard to come by. Came Tom with his big boots on, said he to Troll, pray, what is yon? For it looks like Machinima's Uncle Tim. I shouldn't be lying in a graveyard, caveyard, paveyard. This many years Tim been gone, and I thought he were lying in a graveyard. My lad, said Troll, this bone I stole, for what be bones and lie in a hole? The knuckle was dead as a lump of lead, before I found his shin bone, tin bone, thin bone. He can spare a share for a poor old troll, for he don't need his shin bone. Said Tom, I don't see where the likes of thee, without asking who it should go making free, with a shake of the shin of my father's kin. So hand the old bone over, rover, drover. Though dead he be, it belongs to he, so hand the old bone over. For a couple of pins, since trolling grins, I'll eat thee too, and not I shins. A bit of fresh beet will go down sweet. I'll try my teeth on thee now, he now, see now. I'm tired of nine old bones and skins of a mind to dine on thee now. But just as he thought his dinner was caught, he found his hands and hold him not. Before he could mind, Tom slipped behind and gave him a boot to larn him, warn him, darn him. A bump of the boot on the seat, Tom thought, would be the way to lard him. But harder than stone is the flesh and bone of a troll that sits in the hills alone. As well set your boot to the mountain's root, for the seat of a troll don't feel it, feel it, heal it. Old troll laughed when he heard Tom groan, and he knew his toes could feel it. Legs game since home he came, and his bootless foot is lasting lame. But troll don't care, and he's still there with a bone that he boned from its owner, donor, boner. Troll's old seat is still the same, and the bone that he boned from its owner.
All right, and that, ladies and gentlemen,
I guess so.
That was Broceliande. Micah was just trying to give me a message as the song was ending. Broceliande doing the troll song, taken off of their album, The Starlit Jewel. And I am super excited because I just got permission from Margaret Davis of Broceliande that we're allowed to play Broceliande music on the Secret Fire podcast now. And Broceliande is truly one of my very favorite bands. And this album in particular, we interviewed them many years ago on the old Middle Earth Network radio station, and talking about the Starlit Jewel, this recording is one of the very few to be officially authorized by the estates of J.R.R. Tolkien. It's a limited album. You can only buy it on CD. And there are right now on their website, if you're watching on Twitch, you can see it here. It says 905 left of these. So you can get yours now. It does say buy downloads. That might be a mistake, because if it's not, I'm going to buy another copy for $10.
There you go.
CDs are $16 plus shipping. But anyhow, we're going to be playing more music by Rosselliand, and we're so happy to be able to add them to Mark Gunn and Brobdignagian Bards and the Lonely Mountain Band as some of our very favorite music. And you should go and support all of these musicians. Rosselliand, we'll put a link in the show notes. BROCELIAND.org. Man, did you love that or what?
I did love it.
Okay, well, that was a warning to us all, laughed Mary. It is as well you used a stick and not your hand, Strider. That I like that. That
I just got that.
There you go.
Dang it.
I love that that response. That's a warning to us all, laughed Mary. You know what? Music is so important to us here on the Secret Fire podcast. Obviously, that's why we like to incorporate music into the show whenever it's appropriate. And Brendan, as a storyteller, you know that that song, it may be the earliest form of storytelling, right? Because if you put your stories of your people to a tune, what happens when you match words with tune or meter?
Well, it's a song.
And it makes it more memorable.
Oh, it helps it stick.
It helps it stick.
Especially when you're in cultures that thrived on oral tradition.
Yes.
That did not have this kind of technology that we have today, where we can record and we can we can record it and save it in a file for future generations, or even before anything was ever written.
Right, right.
Before,
Before most people learned their letters.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And cultures where people gathered around a campfire, or gathered around a giant banquet table,
or a mead hall, or
they would gather around and they would listen to these stories.
I mean, what was the purpose of a minstrel?
It depends on why they were there. It was either to entertain the king, or it was to edify the audience. And a lot of the times, a minstrel was very localized. The stories that it chose were very localized to the people that he was talking to. So for a traveling minstrel, you had to have a lot of stories, because you had to have stories that catered to everywhere you went. And, you know, you can think of it as pandering to the audience, but that's what minstrels did.
Yeah.
You know, they were there to help keep the local flair going.
Yes. And they would also put to music, you know, I'm thinking of Beowulf right now.
Exactly. That's where I was going. That's where I mentioned the thing with the king, because a lot of times in the great banquet halls, like in Beowulf, and in Beowulf, it even describes like this happening where the storyteller comes in, and the story, then that particular type of storyteller in the Anglo-Saxon world were called scops.
Oh,
S-C-O-P, either scop or scope or something like that. But they would memorize these huge volumes of epic poetry that told these types of stories.
Yes.
So like the Iliad, the Odyssey, all this epic poetry. And even, well, it'd be kind of meta for the king of Hroth, or for the scop of Hrothgar, to tell the story of Beowulf. That'd
now,
be really meta.
And I'll tell you what. Now in Beowulf, I have a little bit of a problem, because I'll be reading along or listening along, as the case may be, and I'll be, wait, where am I? Am I listening to the story of Beowulf right now, or did they slip? Is this the minstrel singing, the scop singing, and now I'm getting tied into this other epic story that, you know, but regardless, after Beowulf defeats the monster, right, Grendel.
Which one? Okay, Grendel. You know,
okay, yeah. So that's what I'm talking, because
so the chapter one, the monster.
There's several instances where the minstrel or the scop is singing about other tales.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
But anyway, that's how they remembered, and that's how they enjoyed their stories. They loved to hear their stories, and that's why song is so important. And I don't want to step on you. Were you going somewhere else with that?
With song, yes, and specifically this song with the lyrics that Tolkien has given us, they seem to me very, very extremely closely modeled after an old English folk song. From the 15th century, called the Fox.
Ah, hey,
now, have you heard the Fox?
No, I have not.
Let me read. Let's just for sake of compare and contrast, let's read. Just once again, we've already heard Broceliande's wonderful composition of it, but the first verse of Sam's troll rhyme. He says, "Troll sat alone in the seat of stone and munched and mumbled." On a bare old bone. For many a year he had gnawed it near, for meat was hard to come by. Done by, gum by, in a cave in the hills he dwelt alone, and meat was hard to come by. So you've got, let's just take it apart real quick.
Okay.
You've got the first two lines of the verse setting just a little picture, and then you've got the second two lines, which are then repeated. Especially after those last two sounds are repeated. So, for meat was hard to come by.
I love that.
Gum by. In a cave in the hills that he dwelt alone, and meat was hard to come by. Here's the Fox.
Okay.
This is 15th century, a traditional folk
song.
So,
we're talking the 1400s.
Yes, exactly. The fox went out on a chilly night. He prayed for the moon to give him light. For he had many a mile to go that night before he reached the town O. Town O? Town O? He had many a mile to go that night before he reached the town
O. Oh, I love that, Peter. What do you think of that?
That's very, very close. So when I read this, and I read it before I listened to the Rob Inglis narration, and when I was reading it, we've talked about the band Nickel Creek here on the show.
Yes, we have. And thank you to David Gaddy's daughter.
Yes. And they have a song called In the House of Tom Bombadil. In one of their live albums, though, Chris Thiele, the mandolin player, plays the fox. So when I was reading this, I had Chris Thiele in the back of my head playing the
tune.
You're
a genius.
And I was singing it to the fox.
That's why we have you on the show.
Hey, there you go. that recording is available and actually reminded me, and I'll put a link in the show notes, and like to a YouTube
Good.
Video. It's a very interesting song, very fun song. So there you go.
Wow.
There you go. Look at the extent that J.R.R. Tolkien goes to.
I love that.
To bring in his audience.
But this just reminds me of the importance of music in telling tales, amongst other things. Celebration, mourning, all the things. I mean, music is for every occasion, is it not?
If there's an emotion that needs to be grappled with by humans,
yeah.
Song's a good way to do it.
And Paul, the apostle, would write about psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, right? Let's back up just a little bit. And I do have a feeling we're going to have to cut this chapter in half, guys. Okay. Anybody?
We're at the end.
Are we? Okay. Well, we're an hour into the show. If you want to make it a long show.
Oh, man.
Well, we can cut it here, I guess.
Let me make this.
Oh, man. We were right at the end. Let's cut it.
Okay.
Let's just cut it.
Well, because that'll give us maybe a chance. Micah, you were trying to communicate to me about Glorfindel, right?
Well, yes.
I think maybe we should spend some time talking about Glorfindel.
We can, would it be weird to do, I don't want to spend too much time talking about this, but would it be weird to do the end of this chapter and then half of the next?
I don't know. We'll see what happens. Okay, well, let's just do that. But let me talk a little bit about, let's back us up here in this chapter. Page 197, Strider says, "I fear, Sam, that they believe your master has a deadly wound that will subdue him to their will. We shall see." Sam choked with tears. "Don't despair," said Strider. "You must trust me now." Okay, despair is taking place here, but a call to trust. Page 198, the Frodo's elegiac lament. He bitterly regretted his foolishness and reproached himself for weakness of will, for he now perceived that in putting on the ring, he obeyed not his own desire, but the commanding wish of his enemies. So he slipped up and he let his flesh, his own desires, or these desires that are being imposed on him to override his good sense. Somewhere around 199 or 200, Frodo's heart was grieved as he watched them walking beside him with their heads down and their backs bowed under their burdens. Are you guys having a good time over there?
I'm sorry.
I don't know what he's doing. I'm trying to make him stop.
I really hate to interrupt you, but there's some there's some action going on in the chat room.
Oh. So, what?
Well, here, hold on. Let me get...
I hate to interrupt you. Let me go ahead.
Let me go ahead and do it. The cast of our screen is minimalized.
Right.
But that's the way it is in the preview.
Yes.
Okay. There was just concern.
Oh, that's because I had
concern
it on
over
our,
that.
There we go.
Okay. Okay. That's what they asked for that. Yes.
Okay. Sorry.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
Here we go. Frodo's heart was grieved as he watched them walking beside him with their heads down and their backs bowed under their burdens. Even Strider seemed tired and heavy-hearted. Well, this is partially Frodo's fault for giving in, right? Page 201. The hobbits were glad to leave the cheerless lands and the perilous road behind them, but this new country seemed threatening and unfriendly. Page 206. Frodo felt his spirits reviving. The reminder of Bilbo's first successful adventure was heartening. I'm hoping that you're seeing patterns out of these passages. Last yes, one, yes. Page 206. Won't somebody give us a bit of song while the sun is high, said Mary. When they had finished, we haven't had a song or a tale for days. A lot of things have happened in those days since they've last had a song or tale. We have some despair, but a call to trust. We have regret over foolishness. We and beating their own his own chest, so to speak, right? On Frodo's part, we have Frodo grieving that his foolishness is causing his friends and his loved ones extra burden. And even though the hobbits are glad to leave the cheerless lone lands, this new country they're going into seems threatening and unfriendly from out of the frying pan into the fire, from one problem to the next. But then something good happens and Frodo is reminded of Bilbo's first successful adventure, and it raises his spirits a little bit. And then there's this call for song now. Okay. You know what we haven't had in a while is song. Mm-hmm. Do you have something to add to that?
No.
Okay.
No.
That, you know, Paul, as he's writing to the Colossians and these troubles that they are under, the thalipsis that's taking place, the Greek word that means persecution, in a famous verse, Colossians 3:16, out of the net, the New English Translation, let the word of Christ dwell in you richly. How? Teaching and exhorting one another with all wisdom, singing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs with all with grace in your hearts to God. What is the importance? Why is Paul reminding them, hey, as you are walking your Christian walk, this is how followers of the way, this is how disciples of Christ are to live in these troubled times underneath this heavy persecution that's taking place. Here you go. Here's one way to help accomplish that. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, teaching and exhorting one another with all wisdom, singing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, all with grace in your heart to God. What was the reaction to Sam's song? Well, that was a warning, admonition, right? That was exhortation. Hey, a warning. Hey, continue on in that hope is what Paul's telling the Colossians. Continue on in trust, which is faith. That's faving. Yeah. And hope. That was a warning to us all, laughed Mary. That song. What are you doing now?
There's more stuff in the chat room.
Oh, boy.
So did Aragorn and Strider also go by another name, Estelle?
Oh, well Estelle, that, we'll get, or, yes. There's many, and we will get some more.
Yes,
Not Estelle, then. Estelle
in his not his home, but it's a rancher place. Yes.
Right. And so that those are the Christian themes that I think that we can learn from so far in this chapter, that the importance of sitting down, let's have a song. As an aside, there I saw an article the other day about one of the earliest complete manuscripts, like not just partial but complete, found in a grave in Egypt, was the complete, what we call Book of Psalms, complete. And that
really,
yes. And so the archaeologists and the researchers, what impressed on them was the importance of the Psalms to the early church. That's, they held that dear.
Man.
The Psalms. Why? It's the songbook of Israel. It's the songbook of God's people. There is what Paul is talking about. There is teaching and exhorting, and there's joy, and there's lamentation, and there is what we spoke about, all of the human existence, each thing that we have songs for, right? Let's remember that, the importance of psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. So, guys, I think that that we ought to go ahead and stop now.
I guess, man. I was really hoping we to finish it.
Unless you want to do a long episode.
No. We gotta keep
I can't.
It.
Okay.
We gotta stamp it.
Stamp it. And stamp so it. Here comes
stamp it and clamp it.
Need say no more. We best gotta move on. There are still goblins about.
Oh, bother. More mountains?
No. Don't you see? The sun is setting in the west, behind the mountains. We're on the other side, to the edge of the land beyond.
All right. Which part of this part of the chapter, dear listeners, which part so far that we have covered in Flight to the Ford sticks out to you? And why? The descriptive element of it, the words that Tolkien used, are just so... I mean, there was a part that I highlighted early in the book. I don't know where it is now. We're so far past it. But describing the movements of the horse or the pony, I'm sorry. No. Oh, maybe it's ahead of me. It's ahead. We haven't got there yet.
Mm-hmm.
On Glorfindel's horse. Just how it lurched and lunged. And I could feel it because I've ridden a horse before. I could feel those movements. Again, which part stood out to you? Let us know. And we'll give you all the ways to contact us later on. And Brendan, you're still having a good old time.
I'm having a really fun time in the chat room. I'm sorry.
What? I have a question.
Yes.
I know we're about to get you, but why is Darth Plagueis in the party tree?
Darth Plagueis.
Plagueis. Okay.
Because I started reading the Star Wars novel, Darth Plagueis.
Oh, it's about Lotro. Hmm?
No, I'm talking about Star Wars, Darth Plagueis.
But why is Darth Plagueis at the party tree? That's in Lotro.
Yeah, that's a part where we just talk about fun
things
in
Lord of the Rings.
In fact, and this is a great book. It came out a few years ago, and I put it off. You know, I've read the Bane trilogy and the Thrawn trilogy and other books. But finally, I've gotten to an Audible, not a sponsor. It is a fantastic...
They really should be,
though. I know. It's a fantastic book. And Micah, speaking of books and party tree and well-mannered frivolity and all those things, where are you going directly after this show?
Nunyo?
Yes, it is. What are you going to do?
Going to my friend's house to watch Harry Potter.
How come?
Because my friend has not seen them.
And you were
not in a while.
So whoa. Oh. Okay.
If she's seen the first and the second.
So. But so she's not really a Harry Potter fan.
She won't become a fan until the third film, let's be honest.
Well, but you need to correct this.
Yes.
Okay, so that's what Mike is doing.
Yes.
Brendan, any party tree items from you?
The play that I'm directing opens up this next weekend. And
that's at the Fly in Tennessee.
Shelbyville, Tennessee.
So anybody that's near, come up and watch Brendan.
Oh, we're already sold out, dude.
Oh.
What shows this?
The Best Christmas Pageant Ever.
You guys have floor space? It's the best Christmas pageant ever in summer.
Yeah, what the heck is this?
Christmas in July, guys.
Well, wait a second.
Christmas in July.
And what is this best Christmas show ever? What's the title of it?
the best. It's guys. I'm telling you, it's the best Christmas pageant
I know
ever.
That you're claiming that. That's a mighty bold claim.
It's yeah, a bold statement.
What is it called, though?
It's called the best Christmas pageant ever.
That is two times arrogant and boastful. Oh my!
Who's on first? Exactly. Oh man.
Oh my goodness. Hey.
And then, yeah. Oh, and then actually, Saturday is the last performance of the best Christmas pageant ever. I'm still not telling you guys the title of it.
I suppose you think that was terribly clever.
And that performance is that evening. That afternoon, I actually have auditions for the next show I'm directing, which I might need to be here earlier that day.
Okay.
For the recording. We'll talk about that later.
All right. All right. Hey, and we didn't get any feedback. No replies to the party invitations from last week. But we did get that Michael, the ranger from the north, did leave us a little message on Facebook saying that he would like to help out in any way that he could. Michael, I did send you a message, but the way that Facebook works, I don't know if it ended up in your spam account or what have you, but send me an email, please, and we'll give all of y'all all the ways that you can connect with us and communicate with us here in just a moment. Brendan, next week, part two of Flight to the Ford.
Yes.
And that's it.
Which is an awfully short part.
And it also ends book one.
Yes.
Of the Fellowship.
See, okay, so then since we're doing such a small part of the of this chapter next week,
yeah,
the rest of the show could be like that special capping for the book.
Okay.
Just tossing that
there
out.
There you go.
A review.
Yeah, review and overview.
Yeah.
And
yes.
Okay, that sounds good to me. Whatever happens. The Secret Fire Podcast is live each Saturday, Lord willing, at about 1:30 p.m., except for today, Eastern Time, in the GCT Network studio. You can join us for live video on our brand new twitch.tv/Secret Fire Podcast page. And we have folks in there watching now, and Brendan's having a good time in the chat room. We do appreciate that.
And you can join us in the Arkenstone server on Lord of the Rings Online at lotro.com.
To find out more about the Secret Fire Podcast, as well as our other shows, including Finding Christ in Cinema and the Theonauts, visit our main webpage at gctnetwork.com.
You can call us on the voice line at 507-407-GCTN or call us on the emergency backup line at 507-407-4286. Or if your phone's broke, which it might be,
yeah,
you could call us on email.
Oh!
You could leave us an email at secretfire@gctnetwork.com. Now, let's say you want to tweet at us, because if you write with a bird, it's called tweeting. You can tweet at us at twitter.com/secretfirecast. But let's just say you want to listen to the good old podcast.
That's what I'd like to do.
You can go to iTunes. You can go to Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, or your favorite podcatcher, and search them all for the Secret Fire Podcast.
Our theme song, Hobbit's Dance, is from the album Memories of Middle-Earth by Brobdignagian Bards. Find out more about them and buy CDs, digital music, merchandise, everything, by visiting their website at thebards.net. And until next time,
I regret to announce this is the end. I'm going now. I bid you all a very fond farewell.
Goodbye!
Goodbye!
It was tied to a troll.
Oh, they know that joke? They need to know that joke.
You could tell it next time on our special.
Yeah.
Yes.
It'll be a special joke episode.
Yes. They will love it.
Send in your favorite Middle Earth joke.
No, it's not a Middle Earth. I could make it. What if I made it into a Middle Earth twist?
That would be appropriate.
Let's do it.
All right. Let's do it.
Tuned in to the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission. At gctnetwork.com. This is your Great Commission transmission.